I'm Nancy McClellan. I'm the dancing accountant. It's the name of my company. I specialize in, I'm CPA, specialize in small businesses. And we don't do a ton of monthly work for clients, although we do have clients we do that stuff for. And then we have people we just do taxes for once a year. Most of our clients are somewhere in between where we check in on a quarterly basis, calculate estimated taxes. And we really try to bridge the tax accounting and bookkeeping worlds so that our clients are getting the whole picture. And I've relied on Cindy and other buds for some of the bookkeeping and tech stack stuff. And it's just been really, really, really useful, amazing organization that I am so proud to be a member of. So with that, Cindy, if you want to just launch into the questions.
Well, thank you. I feel like we should have had theme music for you. I'm sorry. Nancy, the dancing accountant. Okay, so so I think the biggest question, I mean, so maybe you, can you just give just maybe a quick overview? I think everybody is pretty familiar with the basics, but just in case somebody's not, like the kind of a general overview of what the EIDL and what the PPP is.
Great. So PPP is the Paycheck Protection Program, and it is designed to keep small business employers employing their staff, or if they've already laid them off, it's designed to have them be able to rehire those staff. The loan is calculated based on your average monthly payroll, which sounds like it's really simple, and it's not. Divide it, so you've got your average monthly payroll times 2.5, that's the max amount of the loan you can request. And then as of the date of disbursement, that's new guidance, as of the date of disbursement, you have 8 weeks to spend that money on the required things. 75% of it has to be spent on payroll, and the other 25% can be spent on rent and utilities. But you have to spend at least 75% of it on payroll. And again, it's a paycheck protection program. So because it's trying to get small businesses to keep their staff employed or to rehire their staff, like one very important rule is that you cannot dip below 75% of what your monthly average payroll was before this entire mess started. Can be calculated in various ways. But the two things that you have to comply with are you can't have fewer than 75% of your full-time equivalent employee hours and 75% of the dollars that you were paying out. Each one of the things that I just explained very briefly can be unpacked and made into its own like 2-hour webinar. But that those are the very basics of it. And the reason for it as opposed to unemployment are that with unemployment, you're paying we're basically paying for people not to work. With the Paycheck Protection Program, you are paying people to work. And by paying people to work, the idea is that they can help you either get your business open again once the stay-at-home orders are lifted, or help you during this difficult time identify ways to pivot your business and find new sales channels, help you with social media, all sorts of things that they could do that maybe aren't in their usual job description, but to keep revenue coming in. And so the idea is, let's say in an example where you have a small manufacturing company, if you keep paying your employees or you hire them back or whatever, they can help you create a bunch more product, you know, the inventory that you're selling, and then they can help you sell it and not just through your regular channels, but identify new channels through which you can sell it. The idea would be that in having that happen, instead of you just being there by yourself trying to figure out what's next, by having that happen, you will not only be able to pay them for 8 weeks, but you will hopefully have generated enough income in the meantime to employ them for an extra week, 2 weeks, 2 months, who knows how long. And maybe by then the economy will have opened back up and you'll be able to keep that going. So that's PPP. EIDL is something where initially they said you couldn't apply for two things, those both at the same time. It turns out you can. That's the economic injury disaster loan. Now, these have been around for a long time. This is what happens when Hurricane Katrina hits and the small business goes, oh my gosh, my place is flooded. What do? I need money now. And they apply for an economic injury disaster loan. And now they've made it so that federal government, it was actually the federal government didn't declare a disaster. What they did was declare a national emergency, and the IRS took the code that determines national emergency and the code that determines disaster and decided that this code was going to point to this code. So that means that we're all in a disaster area is the idea. And so you can apply for the economic injury disaster loan for whatever amount. Under $25,000, you don't have to personally guarantee it and you don't have to have any collateral. Under $250,000, there are certain things that that yes, you have collateral and personal guarantees, but you have fewer hoops to jump through. If you ask for it over $250,000, then you've got a lot of stuff you got to jump through. And so this is designed, this is a more traditional SBA loan. They're used to processing these. So it's kind of surprising that they've been slow with the money coming out from it because they are used to processing these types of things every time there's a disaster. And when you apply for one of these, you are eligible for some portion up to $10,000 of an advance on the loan. And that advance does not need to be paid back even if you get turned down for the loan or even if you don't get the full amount that you asked for. There is no calculation. I've heard a lot of people talk about $1,000 per employee for that advance, but that was like one small business association region that put out this guidance and then redacted it. They have not told us what that calculation is. It's a complex one because it's, you know, based on creditworthiness and all sorts of different things.
You know, Nancy, I know the EIDL, you could apply for that right away.
You could apply
before the PPP. Do you know of anybody that has gotten the money from EIDL?
I know people that have been approved for PPP, and I don't know anybody who's been approved for EIDL. I also don't know anybody who's received the advance. Does anybody else on here have that? Leslie? Make sure to unmute yourself.
I am. Great. Thank you. I have one client that was approved, though funds have not been disbursed. Approved.
So they haven't gotten the advance yet?
No, for $296,000.
Been approved for the EIDL or the PPP?
EIDL. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's interesting because the advance for that EIDL, the way it's always worked in the past is that they've gotten that advance like right away. I mean, 3 days.
No dreams.
It's just amazing, you know, so it's a different
Our client got actually $3,000. So he applied for EIDL and for the $10,000 advance. And he got $3,000 because he has 3 employees.
Oh, okay. So
that this $1,000 is actually, even though they didn't say anything in the law that it's going to be $1,000 per employee, but that's what he got as for this morning.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, this morning. Oh, that's hot off the press. That's fantastic news.
He applied on Friday, like first day on Friday, like when they opened that Friday last week.
Two weeks ago, Friday.
So, and he received just now, but he received advanced $3,000, not $10,000.
So the interesting thing about that EIDL is that the way it's supposed to work is that advance is supposed to come before you get approved for the loan. The advance comes regardless. They give you something is the idea because you need money immediately. And then they work on approving the loan. And so you might not get approved for the loan, but you still get to keep, for example, here, the $3,000. Whereas Leslie's saying she had somebody who's actually approved for that loan and yet hasn't received their advance. So that's backwards from how it's supposed to.
I am wondering, though, they have no employees other than the 2 shareholders.
So it's possible they're not going to give them an advance. Yeah. You do have to check that box saying that you want the advance when you apply, so.
But advance should not be associated with employee, like amount of employees. So this is
No, and that's why they redacted. It was, I think, Massachusetts that had issued that guidance and then redacted it because, you know, that's never been how it's supposed to be calculated. It's supposed to be calculated based on the needs of the business, the size of the business, number of employees would be one reason, you know, one thing that, one criterion, I should say. So it's not supposed to be a direct one-to-one sort of thing. I don't know what their calculation is though. So Cindy, so that's the PPP versus EIDL comparison there. One thing I want to say that's really important, you can apply for both, but you cannot spend the money on the same things. You cannot double dip. So if PPP is payroll, rent, and utilities, and 75% of it has to be paid on payroll, and maybe that takes care of your full payroll, then you're paying for 25% of rent and utilities. Maybe the rest of your rent and utilities that didn't get covered, you can use EIDL funds for that. Purchasing inventory that you're then going to sell later on, you can use it for that. The definition for it is any type of expense or cost that you otherwise would be able to pay if it weren't for the disaster is covered under EIDL.
Excellent. All right. So my questions are not in any, they're kind of
doesn't
in a
matter,
random
just
order.
Shoot. Yeah.
So I think most of the questions have to do with the PPP. So, you know, obviously a lot of the bookkeepers are considered self-employed, or they have a lot of clients that are self-employed. So the question was, I'm interested in the self-employed options. I'm interested in who qualifies and who to determine what to qualify for. How to determine what you qualify for.
You qualify for, yeah.
Reading.
Well, that's a great question. And as a matter of fact, if you go through the chat, it's the very first link that I put on there is how to calculate it. But I'll go through that briefly. But let's talk first how to qualify. This is so much easier than you would ever expect. If you have a business and you pay self-employment tax on the income for that business, you qualify. Done. Like that, it is that easy to qualify. If you have employees or are an employee of your own business, you qualify. So think of it in terms of payroll taxes. It is a paycheck protection program. So you can use these funds to pay anybody. I mean, if you think of a paycheck as something that you paid payroll taxes on. So if you're an employee, you're paying those payroll taxes, you know, your Social Security and Medicare, you're paying 7.65% coming out of every paycheck. And the employer is paying the other half of that for a total of 15.3. Those are payroll taxes. If you're paying self-employment taxes, it's the same thing. You're just the employer and the employee because it is very expensive to be self-employed. And so if you're paying self-employment taxes, that's Social Security and Medicare as well. Those are payroll taxes. So if you are paying payroll taxes or self-employment taxes, which are really the same thing, on the money that you make, you qualify. That's all there is to it. As for how to calculate it, keep the same concept in mind. Are you paying self-employment taxes on this? Well, then it's payroll for the purpose of the Paycheck Protection Program. So you can look at your 2019 tax return, and if you only have one business, whether you have employees or not, if you have one business, you can look at the amount that is on line 4 of the Schedule SE. Try to remember if it's line 3 or line 4. It's line 4, because line 4 is the one where you've multiplied it by 92.35%. So you've backed out the employer portion, because the employer portion of payroll taxes is not applicable for PPP. So take line 4 of your Schedule SE, divide it by 12, that's your monthly average payroll, times 2.5 if it's just you. There's your PPP loan calculations. Very simple if it's just you. If you have employees and you are self-employed, then you do the same thing that I just said for your portion, and you run the payroll report from Gusto or ADP or whatever to calculate your employees portion, and you add it all together.
Excellent. So now these loans that are going to be received, the EIDL may be different than the PPP. What expenses are going to be forgiven from that?
Great question. So it's, so if you're talking about forgiven, we're either talking about PPP, which is, you know, probably what that question's about. But remember that the EIDL advance is also forgiven. So that's forgiven, and you don't have to substantiate anything for the EIDL advance to be forgiven. They just give it to you, that $3,000 that we were just hearing about. You get it. Even if you don't get the loan, you get to keep that $3,000 or $10,000, up to $10,000. PPP, the rules for forgiveness are a little bit complicated, and the key here is that we're not going to start seeing forgiveness until these things have been around for 8 weeks. And from there, you have 60 days to actually apply and work it all out with your banker. So I don't think we're going to get very specific guidance on some of the nooks and crannies and ins and out of this until later, because right now everybody is obsessed and freaking out about applying, right? But the basic idea with forgiveness, actually, I want to interrupt myself. Very important to reassure your clients about this. This is so important. I have had so many clients with their like shoulders up here when I'm talking to them, and then it comes down here when I tell them this. Worst case scenario, it doesn't get forgiven. It is still a loan that is not going to have to be repaid for quite some time at 1% annual percentage rate. Okay? It's going to be okay. It's okay if it doesn't, I'll get forgiven. Second thing, if you violate the rules for forgiveness, it's not an all or none situation. The forgiveness phases out. Okay? So those are the first two things to know about. Don't freak out if it doesn't, I'll get forgiven. So the rules for forgiveness, the way that works is so to calculate it, you've got 2.5 times your monthly average payroll, right? That's how much money, up to how much money you can request. You can actually request less than that, but that's up to how much you can get. Now, how do you spend it? New guidance that I just mentioned recently is that it's 8 weeks from the date of disbursement. And the date of disbursement is supposed to happen within 10 days after the date of approval, not of signing. So this has caused a real problem. Somebody remind me about this because I want to come back to that later. But let's say you get approved, you get your money 10 days later. Then as of the date that you get that money, you've got 8 weeks of payroll that you're going to be covering with this PPP. You have to spend 75% of the funds on payroll. That's rule number one. And that one's really pretty straightforward. And 75% means 75% of your full-time equivalent hours and also 75% of your dollar amount of your average monthly payroll that you used to apply for the loan in the first place. You got to keep that up there. You got to keep that up there. If you need to give your employees or yourself a raise to make that happen, as long as you can substantiate that raise, you can do it. You can do that. Leslie, some question related to that?
Yeah, what about, so you pay all your employees, you give them a raise, whatever, and you still have money left. Can you pay the S-Corp shareholders the rest as long as they don't go over the 100?
Oh, well, yeah, I'm talking about the S-Corp shareholder as one of the employees.
Okay, yes.
Well, yeah, yeah. I am totally...
That's what I'm telling my S-Corp owners to just pay it to themselves.
Take the money,
put it in a little fund, squirrel it away, you know, just because you got it, don't spend it, but use that as reserves, like a line of credit, like a line of credit, you know.
Totally. Okay. As long as, yes. So I want to clarify that when I say you got to spend 75% of that on payroll, remember how we just defined payroll. Anything you're paying payroll taxes or self-employment tax on, that means the S-Corp shareholder who's an employee, that means the partner that is getting guaranteed payments and flow through income that is taxed for SE, and that means the sole proprietor at SE. So I am including all of the owners of the companies in this 75% calculation. The one part where I would caution you when you're saying, can I pay the rest of it to the S-Corp employee? Mm-hmm. Okay. You still have to pay people reasonably. So if last year you had the S-Corp shareholder making $75,000 a year and their staff was making $75,000 a year, so it's a total of $150,000, right? And you're paying people out during this 8 week period according to 75% of that, right? And you can't hire some of your people back, or you're unwilling to hire some of your people back, you can't just give yourself the extra. I mean, you probably can give yourself the extra $25,000, but that's not cool. That is not how it is supposed to work. So, you know, maybe you give yourself $80,000 because you're working more hours than you used to. Maybe you give yourself $85,000 because not only are you working more hours, but you're doing it, in a dangerous situation. I'd be tentative to go crazy.
I see a lot of shareholders pushing the envelope with that, though.
Yeah, no, we're going to see a lot of people pushing the envelope on that. The idea is to protect your employees' paychecks, and you are one of the employees. So they're saying, yes, of course you're included in here. Yes, of course you're included, but you're not the only one. So be reasonable about it, right? But yeah, I am including yourself. So let's say, you know, you're just in danger of meeting that 75% by a little bit. Okay, you know, pay yourself a little extra to make sure. I would actually say in that kind of situation, pay your employees a little extra. They're the ones who, you know, especially if you're talking about a restaurant or a grocery store or, you know, a retail facility in an area that hasn't, that doesn't have a stay-at-home order yet. These people are doing hazardous work. Pay them extra. Don't just pay yourself extra. So you do, you know, you are trying to pay, you have to pay out 75% of what your average had been before. And you can tweak that stuff a little bit, but you need to be reasonable. It's just like any other IRS directive. They're going to not be happy if you are clearly taking advantage of this and not participating in the spirit of it. Can you tweak it a little bit? Yeah, absolutely, of course. If it's going to be the difference between getting forgiven or not. So first rule, 75% of it has to be paid on payroll. The other 25% can be paid on rent, can be spent on rent and utilities. If you use all of it on payroll, that's fine too. That's what I'm doing with my company. I have really terrible timing on this because I hired my new tax person starting January 1st. Well, and then I didn't pay myself in March because I was trying to make sure that the company had enough money to pay all of my staff. So if I do the 12-month look back period and I run average for that, I'm screwed because I didn't pay myself in March. If I do 2019, I'm screwed because I didn't have that person. So I'm using the exception for people who have, I can't use the seasonal exception because that's February 15th through June 30th of last year, and she wasn't working for me last year. So I'm using the new business or expanded business one, where you take January 1st through, I think it's January 1st through February 29th. Is what it is of this year. And I'm using that as my monthly average payroll because she was already on payroll at that point. That's what I'm using. Okay. Cindy, normally I'm like keeping one eye on chat and keeping, and then doing this. Are you looking at the stuff that's coming in on chat and I don't have to worry about it?
Okay. You don't have to worry about it.
Awesome. Okay, great. Thanks. Sorry. I'm, because of the fact that I actually have higher payroll per month than is reflected in my average payroll that I used to apply, all 2.5 times what my monthly payroll is going to have to go to employees because I didn't get enough, right? Because I had bad timing. I didn't know there was going to be a global pandemic, you know, whatever. So let's see. So we've got 75% has to be paid on payroll. The other 25% can go to rent and utilities. You have to pay at least 75% of what your average was before, both in full-time equivalent hours and in the total amount. And what else in order to get forgiveness? That's everything. It's really just those two main rules. You have to substantiate it. And here's something that I'm hearing a lot of people with differing opinions. So I'm just going to let you know what the opinions are. A lot of people are saying, you know what, open a separate bank account to run all this stuff through it because it'll make it so much easier to substantiate it. And I've heard people say, well, that's just a pain for 8 weeks, really? Are you really going to do that and hook it up and blah, blah, blah? Yeah, that's a good argument, especially since the employer portion of payroll taxes are going to be in that account as well. On the other hand, I have some clients right now who cannot pay me for bookkeeping. And we're doing our best to do it anyway, but at some point, I'm going to end up running out of money to pay my own staff to do their bookkeeping, right? So if they run everything through this separate account and they don't have a bookkeeper to hook it up for them and track everything, or they don't have a bookkeeper to set up a separate class or a separate subsection of their chart of accounts to track all of this, then yeah, getting a separate bank account and running it all through there and just giving those bank statements to the bank to prove forgiveness, that's a really good idea. So either direction could work. Did I answer that question, Cindy? I feel like it was rambling.
No, you did. And that was actually my next question was, what's the best way to track the funds once it's deposited? And one thing that had come up on a call, I think, I don't remember, there's been so many calls, but was to do a sub account in your checking account. So a sub account just called, you know, the Roni. I don't know what you want to call it. We like to call it the
sub account. All hell breaks loose.
Sounds less scary. But you just make a sub account under your operating account, and then you can, you know, when you get the money in, you can deposit it to that sub account, and then when you pay money out, you can code it to that sub account as well. And it doesn't affect your overall reconciliation because since it's a sub account, you can still reconcile on your main operating account and everything will be in there, but you'd be able to separate it out a little bit.
I love that idea so much. And I learned that in a Bookkeeping Bud Slack channel. I love that. I mean, that's my favorite one because if you can still afford to pay your bookkeeper, that's the simplest way to do it. If you can't afford to pay your bookkeeper and you're doing this on your own, or if you never had a bookkeeper in the first place, separate bank accounts.
And people had talked about the tags, the mysterious tags that were going to come out a month ago that have seemed to disappear all of a sudden. I'm not sure. But if the tags were available, that would also be a great way to do it. So one of the things that, Nancy, that keeps coming up in multiple places is the owner's guaranteed payments. Mm-hmm. So how does that play into effect?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that is link number two that I sent out in the chat, because it's one of the main questions that I'm getting. So again, if we think about payroll for the Paycheck Protection Program as being defined by what you pay self-employment tax on, for a partner in a partnership or a member in a multi-member LLC that is taxed as a partnership, they pay self-employment tax, active members and active partners who are actually working for the company, not silent investors. They pay self-employment tax on their guaranteed payments and on their distributable share, their allocated portion of profits, okay? And I think that's boxes 1 and 4 on the schedule, or on the K-1 that they received from the partnership. Again, it's in the blog post, the second link that I shared. I believe, and there is no official, I should make it clear, out of all the things I'm talking about here, this is the thing that there's the least guidance on, and the most, I don't want to say argument, but banks are unclear because there's been no guidance. And like bankers are unclear about what to ask here. You can do your banker a favor by giving them calculations that are clearly spelled out and guidance from other places you've learned it. You actually can save them work and get yourself or your clients more of a loan, okay? Because self-employment tax or payroll tax is the key here. Paycheck Protection Program, anything that you're paying payroll taxes on should be allowable. So I am saying take box or line 4 on that Schedule SE. If you only have the one partnership, then the line 4 on your Schedule SE is going to have your self-employment earnings on there multiplied by 92.35% to pull out the employer portion. If you don't have your personal tax return yet for 2019, go to the partnership tax return. Go to that 1065 and look at your K-1 that you received. I think it's box 14 that shows self-employment earnings. Multiply that times 92.35 to get rid of the employer portion. Because that's adding boxes 1 and 4 together, right? That's your guaranteed payments plus your flow through. If you don't have any of those things, go to your reconciled QuickBooks file and grab the guaranteed payments off of the line, you know, figure out which portion was for just that partner, and grab their portion of the net income from the bottom line and multiply that all by 92.35%. Obviously, it's usually going to be a little bit higher if you're using the profit and loss. The profit and loss, that is in guidance. Treasury has said you can use the profit and loss. You do not have to use a tax return. I would only go to a profit and loss if you don't have a tax return, just because banks understand tax returns better than they understand P&Ls, shockingly. But anyway, so if you're using that, remember it's going to be a little bit higher because you won't have pulled out 50% of meals and entertainment. You won't have pulled out any officer loan insurance. You won't payments. You won't have pulled out penalties and settlements, related party interest. You know, if that's all you have, that would be added back in. There are some adjustments that you make for taxes, but mostly, I mean, we're not talking about huge amounts. I don't think anybody's going to take advantage of that so much. So I would include both of them for partners. I would include all of your net income for sole proprietors. The big it's not a question, and it's quite straightforward, would be S corps. It's really only your W-2. You didn't pay payroll taxes on the rest of that. So for all of my clients, I always am bugging them to do an annual reasonable compensation analysis to make sure they're paying reasonable compensation. And for any of them who have been ignoring me, I'm like, all right, I'm not helping you on this one.
Excellent. All right. So one of the questions was, for independent contractors who do not have a business checking account, how should they apply for a PPP loan?
Open a business checking account now. Open a business. It's the only way you're going to get these funds. They are not allowed. And this is not banks being dicks, okay? This was a new law that came out like 3 or 4 years ago, where the banks have to do a serious amount of due diligence to make sure that you are a real business, and you must open a business checking account, because those are the accounts that this due diligence applies against. And I know it about this because it happened to me. I was using a personal account for years and years and years, and it suddenly was taken away from me, and they had all my money and they wouldn't give it back. It was a horrible situation. I'm still so mad at that bank. And so I had to go open a business checking account with a different bank, and it took for freaking ever. I couldn't believe it. The laws have changed so much. They're not allowed to disperse these funds to a personal bank account because it's so easy to commit fraud. So easy to commit fraud because it hasn't gone through all of these banking due diligence things. Open a business checking account now. This is a serious problem that nobody really thought about until last week. And now it's like, what do we do? Open a business checking account. Preferably just open it. A lot of these places are making you open a business checking account with the bank. Let's say it's not your usual bank. You're going to another bank. You have to open a business checking account there to get it funded. They won't fund the other bank checking account. So open a business checking account with whomever is giving you the loan or with whomever you're applying. Plus, it gets you, you know, higher up on the list because a lot of these banks are prioritizing their own clients. So if you open a business checking account with the bank that you want to get the loan from, then, you know, you're just going to have better experience all the way around. Do it now. And you know what, guys? You're supposed to be using a business checking account anyway. This is not a new thing. This was like, as I said, I think it's about 4 years ago.
But clients don't necessarily listen to us.
Well, I didn't know it. You guys, I had my bank account frozen because I was getting, they were like, sent me a letter. Oh, looks like you're getting business money coming into this account. I'm like, of course I did. When I opened the account 13 years ago or however long it was, you know, you told me that was no problem. Well, the rules changed along the way. They never informed me. I had no idea. I had everything frozen. I'm really glad I figured this out before the pandemic hit, though. So yeah, just open an account. That is a, you know.
Another question is, can you charge for helping clients fill out these forms?
You cannot charge to fill out the application. That is expressly prohibited by law, which sounds ridiculous. But the reason is, think about bankruptcy cases. Think about how much money actually goes to the lawyers and how little money goes to the creditors and the shareholders. They don't want that to happen with these funds. They don't want these funds to basically be for the lawyers and accountants. They want these funds to go toward the Paycheck Protection Program, right? So that's why they put that language in the law that you cannot charge for filling out these applications. You can charge for consulting and advising, however. So different people are doing this in different ways. I've attended a couple of webinars from people I was really horrified by who were, you know, basically talking about how they're gaming the system and, you know, how they're doing all of the guidance and advising and parsing that out and then making the client fill out the numbers, but really they did all the work, you know, and I think that that's kind of not cool. I know other people who are charging for the basic structure and calculations and then not charging for the part where they walk the client through actually doing it. And I know people such as myself, I made a decision that I'm not charging anybody, any client for anything related to any of the relief. Now I know that sounds like that's insane, but the way I figure it, these are the people who are most in danger of going under. In my case, I mean, I know there are businesses out there who are applying for these who are not in danger of going under, but that's not the, I mean, the spirit of it is that, you know, you're helping people not have to close their doors. If these clients close their doors, I just lost a client. And a lot of these clients are on payment plans with me because they're small places that are, you know, just bootstrapping it. And I'm going to lose all of my payment plans with them. I'm going to lose the client. And most of these clients are businesses in my neighborhood. And if they close, the chains are going to swoop in when this is all over because they're the ones who are going to have the capital. I want to keep them alive. It is in every way, shape, or form to my benefit to help keep them alive. So I'm still charging them for the rest of the work that I'm doing, but I'm not charging them for anything COVID related. And I'm telling you, not only am I going to have the most loyal client base ever when we come out of this, but my clients who don't need my help on this are sending me emails saying, go you, keep doing that. You need to take care of these people. I'm not in that bucket, thank goodness, but I am fine with the fact that I haven't gotten my tax return yet, and I am fine with the fact that you're behind on everything, and bless your heart. So I'm getting loyal client-based development even from the clients that don't need my help right now. So consider it if you can afford it. I mean, I'm in a situation where my husband is like, he's able to work more hours, and he wanted to figure out how we could contribute to the cause, and we decided that him working more hours and me doing this stuff for free, you know, was the best way that we could help out. So consider it if you're able. If you're not able, then make sure you're very, very carefully delineating what you are charging for and what you are not charging for. I recommend putting lines on your, you know, here are the things I did for you that I charged for, and here's the dollar amount. Here are the things I did for you that I did not charge for. Because if your client gets wind of the fact that you're not supposed to be charging for filling out the application, you could be in a legal situation. You wouldn't want that.
Excellent. So I don't know what this question means. Do DBA accounts count?
Yeah, so I know what that means. That person is probably talking about a personal account that has a DBA on it, or a business checking account with a DBA on it. No, they don't count because it's the type of account you have, not the name on the account. And so if you have a personal account, it actually is defined that way at your, like by your banker. They have different rules that apply to them, and they are very lax by comparison. So that's what I had years ago. I had a personal account that had a DBA on it, and that was okay with my bank at the time. And then when these new rules came out, that, you know, so whether if it's a business checking account and it has a DBA on it, that's fine. If it's a personal account, it doesn't matter what it says on there. It could say U.S. Treasury. Doesn't matter. If it's a personal account, you cannot use it for these purposes.
And then Peggy has a question again. I don't understand it. She said her son needs to open up a bank account to apply for the PPE, and the bank said he needs to open a checking account, but he can't open it without an O-4. I don't know what an O-4 is. Is that a W-4?
I think that they meant, they must have meant a W-4.
Peggy,
yeah,
I don't know what an O-4 doesn't is. Work. What's without
a W-9 maybe? So the only thing you need to open a business account is an EIN. Almost every bank will just allow you to open it with an EIN. Is that what you meant?
She's good. Okay. Shaking her head.
Yeah. You do need an EIN letter from the IRS, and that is a really easy thing to apply for. But be careful that you're applying here. I'm going to put this link in here as well, because be careful what link you use, because there are so many places. See, the first thing that comes up is an ad for www.irs-ein-tax-id.com. That is a company that is charging you to apply for an EIN for you. And it's not technically a scam because they did provide a service. So you can't shut these places down, but it's a scam. EIN number, yes. Okay, so here is the link that you should use. There you go. I just put it in the group chat, Peggy. That's the link that you should use for applying for an EIN. You can do it online. It's very easy. They do have hours of the day. You can't do it 24/7. They have specific hours of the day that you have to apply in. And one of the options, when you're going through the different screens, one of them says, why are you needing this? And the radio button, one of the check marks is for banking purposes only. So you just check mark the one that says for banking purposes only. At the end of this, like seriously, it's such an easy little application. It's like maybe if you don't know what you're doing and you have to ask somebody for help with it, max 15 minutes. If you know what you're doing, I mean, I can do one of these in like 4 or 5 minutes for a client. And at the very end of it, it's actually going to give you a PDF of that letter. So you can take that letter that after that 15 minute period of time, take it to your bank. Well, don't take it to your bank. Scan it and send it to your bank, whatever. Give it to them. That's enough to open an account. I do recommend, if you're planning on getting a DBA or an LLC, do that first. And then once you've applied for that with your Secretary of State, then get the EIN so that your DBA or LLC is actually on the EIN. And then the bank, because the bank's gonna only put the name that's on the EIN on the banking account. So better if you plan on getting a DBA or an LLC anyway, do that first and then do the EIN. These are not pandemic pieces of advice. These are just general pieces of advice.
And then Debbie has a question. What about self-employed people who bank off their social security numbers?
Yeah, so some banks do allow you to have a business account with a social security number. Those are grandfathered in. Those are generally older accounts that have been around for a while. As long as it is a business checking account, it doesn't matter what the number is. It's just that now, these days, when you're opening a new account, they're almost all requiring an EIN. But I mean, if you've got a banking, a checking account with your bank and you set it up long enough ago that all they asked you for was your SSN, that's fine. There's no problem with that. You don't need an EIN for any of these relief provisions. Well, that's not true. To apply for the PPP, it does ask for an EIN letter. But my guess is that I'm guessing that it's not a required document. I'm guessing that that's just in most bank. I don't have any clients who don't have EINs because I make them all do this. But I know it's not a requirement. So if you've been using your social security number all this time and you have a bank a business checking account with your bank, it doesn't matter if it's a social security number or an EIN, but it does have to be a business checking account. And if you're unsure, look on your statement. It's very likely, or go online, because it says clearly like business checking, personal checking. It says on there.
Perfect. Now, if the loan is forgiven, does it then become taxable?
No, it's not taxable. Isn't that amazing? That was actually not even extra rounds of guidance. That was something from the very, very first when they came out with this. It's not going to be 1099-C. It's just amazing. It will be to the extent that, because it's not loan forgiveness, 1099-C, to the extent that it's offsetting you're not going to be able to double dip. To the extent that it's offsetting your expenses, you know, it's taxable. You're not going to be able to deduct those and not count the income that covered them. You know, you're doing one or the other. But it's not going to be cancellation of debt taxable.
Okay.
It would be like anything else that came in. You know, it was your PPP funds that came in for $100,000 and then you spent $100,000. They net to zero. I hope that's clear.
And then if it's forgiven, does it show as a business loan when applying for other business loans in the future?
I don't know the answer to that. I am going to, let's see. Got a nice long list of questions that I have been gathering. I don't know the answer to that, and this is not in here.
Is that homework for your dad?
I'm going to say, yeah, that's going to be a question for Bob. Bob, I don't know if you're listening. What about that question? Three, will it show as a loan? We'll see if he can research that and get back to us before this is over. Oh, I should tell everybody who Bob is. That's my father. Everybody wave. Hi, Bob. Thanks. He's a CFA, Certified Financial Analyst, and I have brought him out of retirement to help me with research while I'm doing all of these things. He'll run off and find out answers that I don't know the stuff to, and he's helped me help review my blog posts for accuracy and all sorts of research stuff. And it was really sweet because just the other day he forwarded me something about like lessons you learn when you're young and when you're middle-aged, when you're old. And one of the things it said when you're old is you finally know all the answers, but nobody's asking you any questions. And I wrote him back and I said, you know, about that one, I hope you're not feeling that way anymore now that I pulled you out of retirement to have you help me with this stuff. So he said that made his day. That makes me really happy.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad that he's here. We're quickly running out of time, but I just wanted you to, can you just touch on something, because this has nothing to do with EIDL or PPP, but the stimulus checks.
Yeah.
So there's some false, I'm not gonna say false news. There's some viral videos going around that are making inaccurate statements, I believe, that the stimulus checks are going to just be deducted off your taxes next year. So can you explain about the stimulus checks a little bit? And
yeah. Yeah, no, it's not going to be deducted. That is a true statement in one sense, but it's so easy to misunderstand it. This loan, for anybody who was around for the 2008 stimulus checks, this payment is going to function exactly the same way with one possible improvement. So the way that it happened in 2008 is they say, you know what? We're just giving money to everybody. Everybody gets, I don't know, like $800 a person or something like that. Everybody gets money. And they send you your money. And then on the tax return, there is a reconciliation so that people who didn't receive it for whatever reason still get it, but they get it on their tax return. So what would happen was this. Let's say you were entitled based on the information the IRS had at the time, that you were entitled to, $800 and they only sent you $400, okay? It's extra money. This does not have anything to do with your regular taxable amount. This is additional money. They say, we're just gonna give you $800, but they only gave you $400 for whatever reason. And then it comes time to file that 2008 tax return. And it says, hey, new section on the stimulus checks. How much are you entitled to? It calculates all this thing, says, oh, $800, you're entitled to $800. How much did you get? $400. Oh no, we gave you too little. Here's an extra $400. Now, let's say somebody got $1,000 and they were only entitled to $800. It gets to that point on your return. And in 2008, the way it worked was that if they gave you too much, you got reconciled and you technically owe them $200 now. You would have to pay them that $200 back up to a limit. So if it turned out they gave you $1,600 and they were only supposed to give you $800, you don't have to pay the full $800 back because there'd be a limit to make it so that it wasn't too hard for people. And there are also ways that there are things that you can do to earn more of it. So for example, at that point in time when we saw people owing on those, we're like, make a contribution to your IRA immediately, because that would bring your taxable income down low enough that you would owe less of it back and come hopefully under the threshold. So there is going to be some sort of reconciliation like there was in 2008 on the 2020 returns. So do you have to pay it back? That's the question here. No, you don't have to. It's not coming off of your regular tax liability. It's not an advance on your refund. It's an extra $1,200. It is an additional amount that they are giving you, but it will be reconciled on your return so that if you didn't get all of it or if you didn't get any of it, you won't be out in the dark You still get it. You just get it later than everybody else because you get it on your on that. If they accidentally give you too much, will you have to pay some portion of it back? The original guidance was that this was going to work the same exact way the 2008 ones worked, which were that you would get, you'd have to pay some of it back up to a limit. And now they're talking about removing that entirely and just saying, you know what, forget it. Just keep it. Just keep the money. So it's either going to be that you have to pay, if they overpay you, which is a really small percentage of people, by the way, where this is not something people should be angsty about, really small percentage of people. But if you do owe, you're going to either have it be the same as in 2008, where you owe only up to a point so that it doesn't become an economic hardship, or you're not going to have to owe it back at all. For everybody else, if you didn't get enough, you're going to get it back. For most people, it's going to have a little reconciliation thing that says, I was entitled to $1,200, I got $1,200. So it is extra money. It is extra money. I did see something yesterday that was complaining inaccurately about these stimulus checks being so much less than other countries are giving their people. Now, I will be the first to say I don't think the states are handling this well, not at the federal level, not at the state level, not at the county level, and not at the city level. Like, nobody's handling this well. Everybody's overwhelmed. It's confusing. It's a mess. It's a hot, hot mess. But we're not giving less money to our citizens than other countries. Unemployment is covering somewhere between 70 and 110% of what people's paychecks were. The Paycheck Protection Program, the EIDL. And two things we have not discussed on this call yet, which, because they're mutually exclusive from EIDL and PPP, which are the payroll tax credit and payroll tax deferral, are two benefits that you can't take if you're taking these other ones. And there are situations where it makes more sense for people to potentially take these other types of relief. If you add all of that together, like, we're doing just as well as all of the other countries. We're just not rolling it out very well, is the problem. Because we are not a country that has a safety net, with the exception of Social Security, my father's pointing out to me that the $349 billion allocated to PPP so far, with likely more to come, is more than the GDP of Denmark. So these are big dollars. But what we're not doing well is that, since we don't have these safety nets in place, with the exception of Social Security, there's no easy way for us to get this relief into people's hands. And that is a serious problem. And I'm hoping it's waking us up as a nation to the fact that we need to build safety nets into our social and economic structure. Then if something horrible like this happens in the future, we can just turn it on. And that's what a lot of these countries who have different economic systems than ours, that's why they're coming out so much more successfully from that perspective. It's not that the dollar amount allocated per person or the percentage of payroll is so much higher in those countries. It's that they were immediately able to get this out there because it's like everybody's on Social Security. Everybody has a Social Security account. And they're like, here you go. And so instead of making small businesses apply for a PPP and then using that to pay people, they just say, hey, businesses, keep having everybody show up to business. We'll pay them for you. Wouldn't that be easier? So I want to make that clear.
Great.
There's one thing I want to add, though, that I would like to I posted it on Slack today because it's so brand new. It just came out this morning, which is this. A lot of your clients are not going to have, not a lot, but some of your clients there. So I just put it in the chat. There's a new tool to help non-filers and people who don't have their bank direct deposit info on their tax returns. There's a new tool to get them to be able to register for these economic impact payments. And it was just released today. And then hopefully in the next few days, they're also gonna have a tracking system online to track your economic stimulus payment. One of the things that happens with our type of clients is that they might overpay, but they don't ever get their refund because they always roll it into the first quarter payments the next year, right? Those people don't have direct deposit information on file with the IRS. So they need to be using this. This is not just people who don't file tax returns because they're under the income level or they're on Social Security benefits but have dependents and so they're not going to get enough. This is just people who just have never submitted that information. So it's not just people who get checks. Please make sure you look at that link and identify which of your clients might be in that situation and send them that link and say, hey, you got to get on this now. That's a real way you can be a hero, right? Like noticing for them that this is something that's going to happen to them and giving them a heads up. I know if you have 100 or more clients, it's really hard to do, but to the best of your ability. Even if you're going to help out people like that.
And if you're on social media, feel free to post that. I just took Nancy's whole post and posted it on social media. So if you're following me, go ahead and just share that or whatever you need to do to get the word out. But I want to be aware of everyone's time, and I really appreciate everybody taking time out of your day to be here. And
you
guys really are making a huge difference, you know, in the course of your clients' lives and just in educating yourself on this whole thing. And thank you so much, Nancy. You know, I love you tons and tons. I'm so glad you agreed to do this. And we may need to do another one just as things are coming up, but Nancy is on Slack. So if you haven't been on Slack in a while or you have problems getting on Slack, let me know and I'll be happy to help you. But we have a whole channel, 2020 Strong, where there's been tons of conversations and Nancy's been answering tons of questions out there. So feel free to continue to put your questions out there. And thank you guys so much. Stay safe. And until we meet again, dream big, shine bright, and be kind. See y'all later.